The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 8. Welcome to episode 8 of the Secret Origins Podcast. I am your host, TFG on Mike, and joining me is the very tired, overworked, underpaid, and hopefully passing school, Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hello, good sir. How are you?
The better question is, how are you?
Same good as me. if there's any professors or teachers out there, I want to say, if you're going to put on your final, especially if that part of it is online, that it's 6 simple, short answer questions. Don't expect 2 pages and a question with research cited off of EBSCO. If you do that, you're just evil. Evil teachers.
Yeah. Where's the faculty when you really need it?
Funnily enough, this same teacher has tried calling me 7 or 8 times.
Wow. While I'm at
For other reasons besides the school. But she can't tell me what it is. She can't leave a message. Probably give me some more questions.
That's a little strange.
Yeah. But anyway, how are you, good sir?
I'm not really going to get into too many specifics on air yet. It's just, I've got shit going on in my life that I don't know what's actually going to happen, but we are recording this Sunday, May 9th, 2010, Mother's Day evening, this past week I've gotten several calls from my boss saying, well, I need you to come in, need to talk to you, blah, 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 you know, so I postponed it until tomorrow at 5 o'clock, so Monday, the 10th at 5, so I don't know. The short answer is probably I'm going to be homeless in about a month. I honestly don't know. I really don't want to go into too much more detail than that. Let's see what else. I believe this is the first show that I will be able to say this that isn't a pre-recorded show. This month, with whatever money I had left over, which I should probably have put towards more incidental items, I bought the Matrix set.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I got it, I think about 40, 50 bucks cheaper than I would from the Shout Factory site. Without the shipping, it was $98.49 on Amazon.com.
Wow.
So, it's not too bad. Let's see, what else is going on? We actually have, Geekcast Radio Network has a new partnership, sponsorship, don't really know what the heck to call it, with blogomatic3000.com. I will put their website link in the show notes, and hopefully Steve can get it in the RSS feed as well. There's a lot of geek websites out there now, general geek websites, not specifically Transformers geek websites like TFW. But, you know, like Geek Tyrant and ComingSoon.net and, you know, all these sites. Well, Blogomatic is kind of like that. There actually are, quote-unquote, UK affiliate is what Michael Wilson, our co-host on Beast Unleashed, wants to call them, which is fine. I mean, they are based in the UK, so I guess it could kind of give us a little bit more international coverage. Basically, you know, I give them a weekly thing of what episodes are coming out, or what episodes have been released, and they're going to make a blog post about it, and we're just going to, you know, like maybe I'll talk about one or two of their articles or whatever. The guy that runs the site, Phil Wheat, did an awesome job on an Iron Man 2 review, which, by the way, I did go see Friday.
How was it?
Oh, I love that movie. It's not as good as the first one, but it's not a bad superhero sequel. It's no Spider-Man 3. Everything was handled very, very well. At first, when the recasting of Howard for Cheadle was mentioned, oh god, a year and a half ago or whatever it was, I was very, very skeptical because I liked Terrence Howard as Rhodey in the first movie, and I wanted to see him in the suit as War Machine. However, seeing Cheadle in the role, actually in the movie, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. Now, Don Cheadle is an excellent, excellent actor. I'm not disputing that whatsoever. It's just when I heard his name in association with War Machine and James Rhodes, Rhodey, whatever, you know, it just wasn't clicking for me at all until I saw it, and I would have to say he hit it out of the park.
Awesome.
He kind of looks a little weird in the War Machine suit with the faceplate up, but other than that, it was awesome.
So how was the chemistry between the actors? I mean, I know they supposedly had really good chemistry in Tropic Thunder.
Oh,
kind of carry over any?
Well, see to me, and I'm trying not to talk too much about it because we're gonna do a Geekcast Radio episode reviewing Iron Man 2, like first, you know, theater gone impressions, but I'll go ahead and say this here. Honestly, the second movie to me, I don't know if you've ever seen the Iron Man 94 cartoon. There was a two-part episode called Armor Wars, or The Armor Wars, where Justin Hammer had basically stolen Tony's designs, and in the cartoon, he couldn't do anything about it because he didn't copyright them or patent them because patents are public knowledge, and he didn't want the knowledge of his designs out. The second movie is basically that plot line with the Whiplash stuff thrown in. It's not bad, but like when Rhodey and Tony are doing their thing, when they finally team up and whatever in the battle sequence, it's Iron Man and War Machine going against a bunch of drones, and it looks just like the Armor Wars cartoon episode, except it's live action, obviously.
Cool.
But no, the chemistry between them is very well written. It's very well done. I don't know if as far as it would be chemistry from Tropic Thunder, because I think it's more of character chemistry. Like, they really nailed the chemistry between Rhodey and Tony as far as at his birthday party, Tony was drunk in the suit. He actually whizzed in the suit.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And Rhodey shows up, and he's under orders from the U.S. government and everything else, and he's like, Pepper, look, you know, you got to put a stop to this, or I'm going to have to. And Tony's not listening to Pepper, and blah, 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 blah. So Rhodey goes downstairs, suits up, and comes upstairs with the faceplate up, and he goes, I'm just going to say this once. Everybody get out. Puts the faceplate down, and just repulsor blasts Tony, and it was just awesome. It was just awesome. Everybody needs to go see Iron Man 2.
Oh, I want to go see it, but I don't know when I'm going to be able to see it.
Yes. anything else we want to bring up in the general chat here?
I might have something to report next week, but I think I report this week.
Okay,
that is comic related, and yeah.
Oh. Okay, good deal. Alright, so we are going to get into some episodes.
Previously on Justice League, what brings you to the City of Lights?
I never miss a good party.
Diana, I'd like to introduce you to my fiancé. Vandal Savage is a Nazi war criminal. He was...
My grandfather, Vandal Savage III. A pleasure to meet you. Look at what we've got so far.
a Kazanian operative stealing military secrets. Kazania spearheading the International Space Station.
Good cover to circumvent the weapons embargo they're supposed to be under.
Platform 1 is ours.
It's Wonder Woman.
Why don't you have a word with her? It's the King. He's had a stroke.
If my father came out of the room, my duty is clear. For the good of Kazmir, I must assume the throne until my father is able again. The people need reassurance of the royal family's continuity. Our wedding will take place immediately.
First, we'll be starting off with Maid of Honor Part 1. And Princess Diana, deciding she should get out more, attends an evening party in Paris. Besieged by curious onlookers, she is rescued by none other than Bruce Wayne, who asks for a dance. They're obviously enjoying each other's company when terrorists drop in through the ceiling and seize the young Princess Audrey, heir to the throne of Kaznia. Don't you hate it when they do that?
Yeah.
Bruce is about to slip away and assume his secret identity, but finds it unnecessary when Diana single-handedly rescues Audrey and takes down the terrorists. Audrey thanks Diana enthusiastically and invites her to spend the evening with her club-hopping. Audrey explains she's getting married soon and wants to enjoy her last night as a free woman. Later that night, a trio of burglars break into Star Labs' Paris facility to steal a microchip, but Batman appears. He captures one while the others escape. He tells Diana that the burglar is a Kaznian Special Forces officer, part of a team that has been stealing classified weapons and technology. Diana confronts Audrey, who swears that neither she nor her father know anything about it. At her engagement party, Audrey introduces Diana to her fiancé, Vandal Savage. Diana recalls that the Savage's involvement in World War II, but he claims to be Vandal Savage III, the grandson of the Nazi-era Savage. He is now administering Kaznia's substantial contribution to an international space station. In space, a team of Kaznian operatives board the space station and take the crew hostage. In Kaznia, a maidservant poisons the King on Savage's orders, giving the appearance of a paralytic stroke. Hearing the news, Audrey flies home immediately. When Diana hears the news, she flies to intercept their plane and warn Audrey, but is knocked out by a sonic blast from Savage's henchman, Colonel Vox. In Kaznia, Audrey decides that she needs to assume the throne for the good of her country, and as a sign of the royal family stability, announces that her wedding to Savage will take place immediately.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking Paris Hilton when you saw the whole episode, too?
Oh, God. I have a note about that later. My first three notes are about her exchange in the party. She goes, excuse me, and then she flies up to the chopper, knock, knock, like, you give up, right?
That was awesome.
I gotta say, though, you know, her not having to, or Bruce not having to, obviously, become the goddamn Batman, she just rips the lower half of her dress off and basically creates a black version of the Wonder Woman outfit. That was awesome.
Well, if you're wearing a tight, slinky dress, it's not very good in combat.
clubbing, huh? Diana gonna learn a lot from that.
How to properly, interact with people?
Yeah, really. Bah, your foreign language don't faze the goddamn Batman.
That was awesome.
Even in a foreign language, Batman can be a badass. That is so awesome.
And extremely intimidating. I do, and you will.
Yeah, exactly. I hate the Audrey character. I honestly do. I cannot stand her. She is such a bratty kid. I mean, it's nice that she finally realizes in the end, and of course we're not there yet, but it's nice that she finally realizes in the end of what she has to do as far as being responsible, but I hate the whole setup.
It's a long time getting there.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like 22 minutes of hell. Paris Hilton animated.
No, we got to give Audrey a little bit more credit.
Well, yeah. In this first part, it's pretty much Paris Hilton animated.
Oh, yeah. She just had a little chihuahua.
Yeah, really. I have no idea why I wrote Paparazzi to the Max, but I did. I have no idea what the episode that happens, but...
Cue the Lady Gaga.
Oh, God. Well, dang, no girl-on-girl action. That sucks.
Are we sure? Yeah. Even I was like, huh.
Well, there's part of that scene where they're, like, linking arms and blah, 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 and I could have sworn there was a very, very fast pan to where it looked like Audrey touched her ass, but I don't know.
See, I didn't catch that, but it definitely made me go,
Exactly.
Diana's having a little bit of too much fun.
Yeah. Eek! Vandal Savage is back. This is the second time we see him in Justice League. I believe the next time we see him is in Hereafter.
He's getting up there with Lex Luthor, that's for sure.
Yeah, pretty much. The end of this one. Your services are no longer required, Your Majesty.
That was just...
That was just cold.
It was.
And this is, this first part, I think the rest of the league finally shows up in the end of the second part, but, this first part is so just a Batman and Wonder Woman episode.
It's a very shippy episode.
Yeah. What about you? What are you thinking about this one?
Okay, the beginning, Diana looked absolutely amazing.
Yep.
That was just awesome. Bruce saving the day, and then, let's see, Bruce is a chauvinistic pig making Diana do all the work.
No, he's not.
He's like, oh, go to it.
Mm. No, not at all. Whatever. I disagree with that because, you know, she's the first one to throw it in everybody's faces that she can do whatever she wants. So, technically, he's not being a chauvinist pig. Of course, they'll have a pig moment later in Justice League Unlimited, but we'll get to that way down the line.
Oh, that was bad. That was a bad pun, sir.
Yeah, a bad pun.
Let's see, the whole chopper part.
Uh-huh.
Was it Audrey says, I've never seen somebody break a chopper in half. She's like, oh, it was my first time.
Yeah, there's not innuendo there at all.
No. Let's see, I like what she said, how Audrey was like, not many people like Casmia. Not many people in Casmia like Casmia. Apparently she does know how bad it is, and she isn't trying to help her people. She's more interested in partying. Woo.
Yeah.
I don't know if they did that just to put that dichotomy between now and her character development, but...
Well, you mean the whole Casnian thing?
Yeah.
Well, the whole Casnia thing is... Casnia is... Oh, man, how... What can I link to here? Basically, Casnia is the DCAU's version of, say, Russia or Iraq when Saddam was still in power. It's pretty much the de facto military, you know...
Totalitarianistic society?
Yeah, pretty much. Because Casnia was first introduced back in Superman the Animated Series with John Corbin stealing the Lexo 6000 or something from Lex, some battle suit that Lex was actually giving to Casnia. So it's just one of those things where it's the DCAU bad guys, general bad guys that have no superpowers.
Woohoo. Oh, okay. My brain's kind of
mush.
Going, yeah, I'm trying to think of something. Okay, so we see Colonel Vox. Sorry.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of when I saw him was one of the guys from Venture Brothers. One of the villains who had like this giant metal. Oh, Baron Underbite. That's who I kept thinking of.
Baron Underbite?
Yeah, he just has this giant metallic chin.
What the hell kind of a name is Baron Underbite? Oh my god. That's funny.
Well, he's this giant, you know, metal chin, basically. let's see, again, we already touched on them being very, very close.
Yeah.
When Diana went into the club, it seemed like her mind was just totally blown.
Among other places.
Yeah, she went to Hugh Hefner's party in the prior episodes. I think that would have inoculated her a bit for that culture shock, but... what else? Audrey making the joke about how Diana has feet of clay, which is kind of a throwback to one of her origin stories.
Yep.
How the hell can Diana afford, like, that apartment?
Well, like, is that government money? I don't think it was her apartment, though.
Was that the hotel she was staying at?
Yeah. That was the hotel that she was staying at, I think. Yeah, because they were in Paris, still.
But how could she afford that?
I don't know, maybe she's making Wonder Bars or something on the side like Flash does eventually.
Helping out Steve
at the place? I don't
know. What else do I have?
That's not all she's helping Steve with.
Thank God for Viagra.
Oh, damn. That's so irritating. That's even more wrong than my pig pun earlier.
Think about it. How old is he? How old is Vandal?
No. We'll get to that in part two. Oh, my God. Oh.
Okay, what else do I have? Bad dictator, know your staff better. What are you still doing here? I'm going to drink this poison drink. Really? You didn't order wine? You would have thought about that, maybe. Okay, I did notice that when Vandal was holding onto the princess, and he says, as you say, princess, the art quality really, really jumped up tremendously. It was really high detailed, and I was like, oh, why couldn't we have this all the time? It was very weird to see Bruce, an actual image of Bruce, without the whole cape cowl in normal business clothes, speaking with Batman's voice. It just seemed really out of sorts for me.
On which scene was this? You mean when he was in the hotel room and they were on the phone?
Yep.
Yeah. He's done that several times throughout the DCAU. There have been times...
It's really weird.
Well, I actually like it because it's kind of cool. It's kind of like, hey, I'm Batman, but I'm really Bruce Wayne talking to you as Batman. It kind of goes to the whole thing of, I forget who stated that, you know, Batman is the main personality and Bruce Wayne is the mask more than the cape and cowl. I know people have said it over and over and over again, and I know people right now are screaming at their iPods or iPhones or fucking iPads, you know, saying, you know, it's this guy or it was that guy, but somebody said that, I think it was Kevin Conroy, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, who said that he thinks that Batman is the true personality and Bruce Wayne is the disguise. But I actually like it because he's done it a couple of times in BTAS. I can remember specifically, Over the Edge, which is the BTAS episode that the Scarecrow was in, that supposedly it basically showed what would happen if Commissioner Gordon found out that Barbara was Batgirl, and it's basically Batgirl / Barbara Gordon's worst fears coming true. The fact that, you know, Commissioner Gordon would find it after she's dead, and he would hunt down Batman and everything else. There was a scene in that episode where Commissioner Gordon calls Bruce Wayne, and he calls Batman, and, you know, Wayne picks it up and speaks in the Batman voice. He's like, oh, you can just drop it, Bruce. We know who you are. So I like it in certain parts. It just depends on when he does it, because it's so freaking cool, I think. Well, that's just me. What the hell is that?
Nothing.
Oh.
Shall we work on the second part, then?
Yeah.
Because I think I'm out of points.
Okay, good.
Okay. Oh, actually, I did, for the briefest moments, it was like Audrey was put aside that childish stuff and then was like, okay, I'm in charge. I'm my daddy's girl. I'm taking over. Roar. I'm going to set things right. And then she says that she's going to marry Vandal.
Oh.
Way to just go back to that back seat, girl. Proud of you. Oh. Okay, part two.
Yeah.
From part two, Diana awakens in a French farmhouse after her fall. Batman informs her of Audrey's impending nuptials, and Diana flies to Casnia in a rage, followed by the Batwing. In a fight with Casnia's military forces, she throws a tank through the wall of the palace chapel just as Audrey is getting married. She's incapacitated by Savage and taken prisoner. Feeling humiliated, Audrey refuses to listen to Diana's warnings. Audrey becomes queen, making Savage de facto ruler of Casnia. He immediately announces his plan via worldwide broadcast. An orbital railgun has been mounted on the space station, capable of firing asteroids at Earth with pinpoint accuracy. To demonstrate, he fires one at the ocean, creating a tidal wave that sinks a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier group. Savage claims dominion over all the nations of the world. Seeing the broadcast, a Justice League team, The Flash, John Jones, and John Stewart, head for the space station in the Javelin, but are shot down by the station's defenses. Audrey confronts her husband. Savage admits that he's the original Vandal Savage, and is, in fact, over 25,000 years old, and that he had poisoned her father. Audrey flies at him in a rage, but is dragged away by her own guards and locked in her room. In space, Green Lantern's ring has kept Jean, Flash, and himself safe from the explosion. They board the station and fight to retake it. On Earth, Batman frees Wonder Woman, and with Audrey's help, they fight their way into the control center, knocking out Savage and his henchmen, but not before Savage initiates a meteor strike on Paris. They are unable to prevent the railgun from firing, but Batman changes the target to the palace. He hits the evacuation alarm. While the conscious guards and servants flee, he and Diana evacuate Audrey, the unconscious guards, and the paralyzed king. The asteroid hits, with Savage still inside. In space, the rest of the League evacuates the space station, which then self-destructs. As Diana and Audrey inspect the ruins of the palace, Savage emerges from underneath the rubble, disheveled but apparently unharmed. Audrey's guards seize him and drag him away. Diana teases Batman, saying that they never finished their dance. Batman says he doesn't know what she's talking about. She smiles and says, "If you say so," but insists that they still have to go dancing together.
Okay. I think I like this one a little bit better than,
part one?
Yeah. A lot of good quotes in this one, I thought, especially from Wonder Woman. When Batman tells her the wedding is happening now, like Hades it is.
I love that.
For a minute there was a scene when they're flying off, and Batman's in a Batwing, and she's just, you know, flying, whatever. For a minute there, I thought he was going to let it blow up, but he does eventually let it, well, he doesn't let it blow up, it gets shot down, but, yeah. I like how they switch to the wedding with the bride music, and then switch back to Wonder Woman fighting with the bride music still playing.
Yep.
That was kind of cool.
It actually seemed really reminiscent of the opera scene from The Fifth Element.
Yep.
It was just that beautiful dichotomy that they had going.
Yep, very much so. Not that I dislike Wonder Woman or Batman, but finally some other leaguers show up.
And it's not some guy that can speak to pigs.
What do you think? I mean, we've kind of hinted at this earlier in season one of the show, you know, the first six episodes, that Jon Stewart is pretty much a hard-ass military guy for the most part. What do you think of his assumption of astronauts are military, they knew the risks as far as saving them?
That's... I totally, totally disagree.
Well, because he also says, if it were me, I'd want you to save the world, not come after me. And then Flash goes, "Yeah, but we'd come anyway."
Yep. he seemed like a total the tool from season one that we grown to hate.
Yeah, pretty much. What a weak ass javelin! That thing blew it up real good.
it does kind of explain what happened to Chapel in 1-6.
Yeah, really? yikes, he's over 25,000 years old. Ew. another Flash one. Hold these, would ya? Sucker. you know, this is the thing we gotta bring up. This whole being in space thing. Like, you know, they eject Flash out into space. Technically, he should no longer be. I mean, Green Lantern does get out there and save him, but it's like, what the hell?
I'm trying to think of all the physics, and I don't really even know what happens to a body in a vacuum other than he should be exploding because of the internal pressure. But I imagine with his metabolic rate, he would have been out of oxygen a long time ago.
Yeah. Actually, my note for that was, oh no, it's Flash floating in space. He should be dead.
it's like, really? GL's going to fly out there and save him? Really? I'm pretty sure by the time he got out to the airlock, he would be dead.
Mm-hmm. I forget who said it. It was Wonder Woman, okay. To Colonel Vox, we need to bring up that she borrowed Audrey's diamonds to put in her ears as blockers. She goes at the end when she crushes his Vox box, not another word. Somehow the comedy alternative to that would have been quiet, you.
Oh, God.
You're still taking me dancing. I like that she... fact that she kind of knows, or she either knew or figured it out. I don't know. What about you?
Well, just when Diana says, like, Hades it is, and then flies away.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce has got this, like, crap-eating grin on his face. I'm like, yeah, he just likes some feisty. And then she's going in there, and I'm thinking, so you blew up part of your new BFF's military might. How's that working out for your friendship? It's going to go well. So they're at the wedding. There's no real paparazzi, yet she's doing this for a publicity stunt to unify her people. That seems totally illogical to me. But again, she's not that smart, apparently, because she's, you know, marrying Vandal Savage. And he becomes prince when he marries a princess, but she gets bumped up to queen. I'm not sure how that works.
Well, now, it's another thing we need to talk about. They brought it up on World's Finest Podcast, and I didn't listen to what Mike and James had said about it, but they got a whole bunch of emails as far as that goes. If the actual king is still around, but incapacitated, you can't become, if you marry in, you can't become a king until, I believe, that person passes away. I don't know, it's a whole convoluted thing. I'm not really sure. It didn't really bother me that he was called Prince Vandal Savage, because, as we all know, it didn't turn out so well.
No, but he would probably just bump off everybody else in the royal family eventually, anyway.
Yeah.
What else? KO the KO Black Bolt when she knocked out Vox.
Oh yeah,
it just popped in my head. Did they actually get the king out? Because I don't remember seeing the king leaving.
That's the other thing that was a point of contention. I didn't see it either. I mean, there supposedly is a frame where they were carrying him out, but I don't know.
I didn't see it, so I was like, okay, just going to leave your daddy there, or did she already take him off life support?
I'm not really sure. I can't say. I have no idea.
And then the actress that played Audrey, her accent slipped when she was being pulled away. She went to general English, no European accent at all. I was like, oh, okay. Diana is held up by some sort of restraints against the wall. Just her arms. She's about as strong as Superman. Why doesn't she just, you know, kick out the stones underneath her and take down the wall?
No, her legs were pinned too.
Were they?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm like, wow, she could take out the wall. She doesn't want to take out the wall and offend her friend's, you know, damage her friend's jail, but she could take out, like, 4/5 of the military might of the country. No problem.
See, that's the other thing that pisses me off about some of this stuff. I mean, honestly, restraints, seriously? And that also goes back to the Enemy Below episode. Restraints and them
being
bound. I mean, come on, these people are fucking superheroes. I mean, we've seen Superman breathe in space, we've seen him breathe underwater, we've seen Wonder Woman do similarly the same things. We'll get to a later episode where she has to go up against Devil Ray in Justice League Unlimited, where she actually has to go up to the surface, catch her breath, hold it again, and go under. That makes no damn sense to me. I mean, we'll get to it when we get to it, but it's just, it's one of those inconsistency things. You know, you're right. You know, she could technically, whether her hands and feet or just her hands were shackled, okay, it wouldn't have mattered. She could have still pulled off that freaking wall. I don't know. It just goes to show you that they're still trying to find their footing. I mean, they've found, like, Bruce Timm and company, they found it in Season 1, and they're, you know, going for it here in Season 2, but it still shows that there's inconsistencies.
I guess it's just going to be the way it is for a while.
Yep.
Oh, what else? Okay, so we see the Flash. He comes back. He's all, like, you know, not able to breathe. Really hungover from being out in space. And then he gets up and, like, takes out everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, where has this been the entire, like, season so far, and the season before that? Where the hell has this been?
Well, I don't know. But, yeah. And it was funny about that because, it also goes back to, you know, what effects does space have on them? Because when he was coming, when GL brought him back in, Flash had his arms crossed across his chest, and he's like shivering, like he's freaking cold. Obviously, space is probably cold. I don't know. I've never been there. I don't plan on going. But it's one of those things where he's shivering like he just came out of a deep freezer. It's like, you know, it's like Jay and Silent Bob locked Randall and Dante in a deep freezer or something. I don't know. And then all of a sudden, like you said, he gets up and goes punching everybody. It's like, another thing about that, did you notice after he punched the last guy, he shakes his hand and says, ow?
Yeah. Well, it's nice to see that he's actually he's useful. He's useful. He takes out all the guards. He, like, does the whole, oh, here, hold these, that sucker. You know, it's nice to see him actually showing some use instead of just being comic relief.
Yeah, I agree. Do we have anything else to say about in Maid of Honor?
Yeah, if you've got an international space station with a giant weapon on there, why didn't you just take out the weapon part? It's an international space station. It's not belonging to just one station.
Well,
one nation. And then boom! I'm like, way to go, GL. Only you would come up with something like that. Maybe you're Girlfriend well, Hawk Girl. But
oh, God. I can kind of explain it away. It goes to the whole fact that Kasnia is on a... they're supposed to be under a weapons embargo. And what's to stop them in the future of creating weapons on the space station? Because they are the ones that... Kasnia was the country that primarily funded the space station. So, you know, no, they don't need it. Boom.
It was just one of those, like, it's an international space station, you tool. Why don't you blow it up? And then, if you were Vandal Savage and you know you have to deal with the Justice League, they foiled you once before, they happen to have a floating space station, you happen to have a railgun in space. Why didn't you blow them up first?
That's the other thing I want to bring up. You know, they show the watchtower being in space. Okay? And they show this space station being in space. Yet they don't ever show them in the same frame or whatever. It makes no sense to me how the space station can exist in space and the watchtower can exist in space, yet they never come into contact with them. Unless the watchtower is over one side of the Earth and the space station is over the other side of the Earth. That makes no sense.
Unless they were at different parts of that asteroid belt.
Yeah, true. It's just one of those analytical things that is going to make our brain hurt if we...
Trying to hard.
Yes.
I think that's all I got, actually. Oh, wait, no, Vandal's re-emergence out of the...
Yeah.
On the Earth, he's all broken up, like distorted, and
yep.
You see the bones resetting. It's like, wow.
Kind of reminds me of the aliens in Secret Origins 3-part from season 1. All right, well, we are going to move on.
Sentient being.
A what?
It's alive, in pain. It wants to make contact.
Not this time! Connect with it.
Spooked here.
Hear me, O children of Kalinor. Behold, I am the Pytar, the living soul of this planet. Gespero is a great deceiver. He has misused my power for his own petty ends. I say unto thee, the Pytar is not a source of hatred, but a beacon of hope. In times gone by, Kalinor was a paradise. It can be again, but thou must reject the dark ways of Despero and step into the light. The choice is thine.
Forsake me! Now I see paradise.
It's a miracle.
It's just the normal life force of your planet reasserting itself after centuries of entrapment.
And you won't have to worry about Despero anymore.
Where is old Three Eyes?
He finally saw the light.
Finally up today is Hearts and Minds. Oh boy, here we go. Starting off for part one, on Randstad 7, a squad of four Green Lanterns under the leadership of Cat Matui are fighting an invasion force. They are losing. Back to the caves, four soldiers surrounded by energy weapons assault them, but the energy from the lantern's power rings is unable to pierce the shields. Galeas and Arcus attempt a breakout, but they are killed. Cadma orders Kellogg to get it to escape and warn the Guardians of the Universe how dangerous the enemy is while she covers his escape. Reluctantly, Kellogg leaves. On Earth, John Stewart and Hawkgirl are making some repairs to the station, but Hawkgirl made the mistake of telling Lantern to adjust them clockwise, which is counterclockwise on Thanagar. Oh, jeez. We'll get to that, but Jesus. Suddenly, an unidentified object is detected on approach towards Earth. Hawkgirl, Flash, and John Jones head for the Javelin 7. Wait, shouldn't that be the Javelin 8?
It got better.
It got better. Well, John goes to see what it is. Reaching the impact site, he finds Kilowog barely alive. He manages to tell John that they, quote-unquote, they, got Cadma, but passes out before he can say any more. John tells the League to take care of Kilowog and then heads off. No, he doesn't just head off. He blasts out of that blast site. I mean, he's just like, whooshing! Oh, jeez.
Oh, fuck a rocket.
Yeah, really. Jean is able to heal Kilowog at the infirmary. Kilowog says that his unit was trying to stop the Legion of the Third Eye, a fanatical cult led by one Despero of Kalinor. Unfortunately, Despero's forces were powered by something that rivaled even the energy of the Lanterns. He also explains that Cat Matui was Jean's trainer in the Corps. Kilowog is fit for duty, but he needs to recharge his ring, and the only one available is Jean's power battery. Meanwhile, John has found Randstad 7 and the remains of the G-Class cruiser. His ring is able to track Cat Matui to Kalinor. Arriving, John finds a desert world with broken people. Two soldiers are detaining a Kalinorian for having books, and John knocks them out, only for the people to run in fear of him. John decides to head undercover. On Earth, Flash has taken Kilowog to John Stewart's apartment. Oh, God. One thing with the battery is there. As Kilowog searches, Flash does a little exploring and finds a full quart of Bob and Terry's. Nice Ben and Jerry's reference. Oh, jeez. And a tape of Old Yeller, both of which Kilowog eats by mistake, declaring both delicious. I'll get to that in a minute. You gotta remind me to say something about the eating of Old Yeller. Suddenly, John Stewart's landlady finds them aware of John's day job. She assumes that they're aliens and begins attacking Flash with a broom. Kilowog manages to find the battery in a pocket dimension, and the two leave. On Kalinor, John has tracked down Cat Matui's living quarters. Despite some initial resistance from Radoko, he manages to enter the house and find her power ring. Two guards subdue him and take him to the royal palace. There he meets Despero, leader of the Legion. Despero explains that once he was an outcast for his third eye, but while traveling in the desert, he was assaulted by robbers and was saved by the flame of Pytar. The Pytar foretold that Despero was to lead Kalinor to paradise. Using the Pytar's powers, Despero took control of Kalinor. And Despero now intends to spread the glory of the Pytar throughout the universe. John has heard enough and attacks, but Despero's Pytar-given powers are quite formidable. Fueled by his rage and hatred, defeated, John is knocked to the ground at the feet of the newest priestess, Cat Matui. Despero orders her to sacrifice John to the Pytar as she complies. She takes him to the Pytar's central room, revealing the Pytar to be a massive fire. Massive purpley fire, actually. Despite John's pleas, Katma throws John into the Pytar. In a room underground, Raduko and the other Kalinorian and another Kalinorian are working on a matter transporter. Despite some technical trouble, they're able to rescue John Stewart from the Pytar. The older Kalinorian introduces himself as Shiflet, leader of the anti-Despero resistance. The matter transporter is not much, but it has saved a few. It also is made by their newest. It was also made by their newest member, Green Lantern Cap Matui, who enters to see John, and overjoyed John runs to her and gets a right hook from Katma, who chastises him for nearly blowing her cover. Katma explains that Shiflet and his people rescued her and helped her get into the palace as a priestess. She knows that Despero is raising a massive force for conquest, but doesn't know the specific plans. John gives Katma her power ring, and they share a passionate kiss. At the palace, Despero empowers his soldiers with the power of the Pytar, which they will use to spread the greatness of Despero and the Pytar across the universe, and the Legion of the Third Eye goes forth as horrified Katma watches. Thoughts?
Let's see, yay, more Green Lanterns! More Green Lanterns! When at first I saw Katma, I thought it might be, someone else, but it dawned on me, oh wait, this is probably Katma, considering we've got John in this. At first I didn't know what the bad guys were. I thought they were accordions, maybe. But they killed two Green Lanterns right from the beginning part of that.
Yeah, my first note, oh, there goes Gallius and that bearded guy, because I never could remember Argus's name, because I've only seen him once before, which was in Blackest Night.
Right. They showed up, like, just once.
Yep.
What else? We got to see Kilowog again. Hear him actually say Poozer, which was just like, oh, yes! I'm surprised they're bringing in Cat Matui and they're not bringing up the fact that in the comics they were married. Which would have been a whole monkey wrench into the whole, like, romantic triangle thing, but...
Well, see, the thing with that is, though, because he's actually supposedly going to start dating Hot Girl, you know, I mean, that we're building up to that. That'll actually happen at the end of Wild Cards. But, I mean, they show that they have a passion or had a passion, so I don't mind it, but, you know, you're the comic guy.
I'm all for it. An interesting side note is that Cat Matui is from the same planet as Sinestro. So
that's kind of scary.
The landlady's freaking awesome. I love that landlady.
Yeah.
If we need a replacement for Hawkgirl, we'll let you know.
Yep.
The VA for Despero, voice actor, was just... Oh,
Keith David is amazing.
It was awesome.
Keith David is just one of the best voice actors as far as voicing, like, this type of role. You've seen New Frontier, right?
Yeah.
He was the voice of the Void thingy.
Oh, that's true. Completely forgot about that. Oh, what else do I have? Despero's whole, like, monologue, I guess.
Yeah.
He's going over, like, feel my hate, feel my rage.
Yeah.
Red Lanterns represent hate, rage, and they destroy Green Lantern power. So it was like, oh, nice little Easter egg there. Probably not intentional, but very cool. I like that.
Right.
There was an animation error where suddenly the rings on John's fingers disappear again. It's as usual.
I don't know if it was an animation error. I think it was from when Despero blasted him or whatever, when they blasted each other and they both ran out of energy or whatever, and Despero won. It's kind of like when they cut the ring off, completely off. They destroy the ring in Starcrossed. I think they were kind of going for that same type of thing where, oh, wait, he broke his finger. The ring can no longer work anymore.
Sure. Yeah, so he's kind of got a little thing going on with Hot Girl, and then he's smooching Katna. Okay. Two-timing bastard.
Hot wing threesome?
Ooh.
Barbecue hot wing sex threesome.
Yeah. You can go for that. Let's see. Was it totally intentional to make her look like Slave Leia?
Possibly.
And
leaves very little to the imagination, I'll tell you that much.
I've been wondering though, she gets the ring back.
Yeah.
Where the hell did she put it? Because that thing doesn't have pockets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got a note about that in part two, so we'll get to that in part two. What else do you have?
The salute that they were doing, was that intentionally supposed to be like Nazi Germany salute?
Could be.
Just to drive home the whole fascist state of the situation of the state?
Probably, yeah. I would say so.
That's all I got. Go for it. What do you got?
Okay. Well, I already mentioned the whole Galeas and Argus getting killed. Kellogg is the only survivor from the Lantern team that was in that battle. Does that mean he gets a million bucks now?
Oh my.
You sound like an old married couple. Which I believe is what Flash says to GL and Hot Girl.
And they're just stunned in silence, and he goes, oh, that's better.
Yeah. Flash reads comics.
Good man.
He was teacher's pet. Go GL. most of my notes are mainly just one-liners. One of the ones from GL was, I'm here on business from Despero. He was trying to get rid of one of the guards or something. I don't remember.
Yeah.
You already mentioned if we ever need a replacement for Hot Girl. I don't remember what the hell. I wrote down in all capital letters, hey, she can't do that. And I don't remember what the hell it was about.
Kind of throwing him in.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yep. Wow. Despero is just a power mad despot. Yeah, but that's pretty much all I have. I don't know. I like this episode, but it's not one of my favorites from season two. This batch of episodes we're talking about here today, these are not episodes I will go back and watch for fun. These are episodes that if I need to watch them, I'll watch them. But I don't know. This one just doesn't really enthuse me at all. It's basically, you know. Honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, it's basically Vandal Savage with a third eye on a different planet colored purple. With Keith David's voice acting. Alright, so getting into part two here. At the Resistance base, Katma informs the group what is going on and that Despero will be able to expand his legion by bringing in a new convert. John decides to mobilize the Green Lantern Corps and prepares to head to Oa. However, a Legion task force breaches the base as Katma springs to action. Which I'll bring up in my first note when we get to that. John finds that he can't use his ring. Grabbing a weapon, he gives covering fire as the Resistance scrambles for the secondary site. Unfortunately, tanks block them off and Resistance is cornered when the Justice League and Kilowog arrive and help them out. The Resistance and the League regroup at the secondary site, ancient catacombs with untranslated inscriptions. Jean is able to interpret some of them, and they indicate that Kalinor once was a thriving ecosystem instead of the desert world that of today. Shiflet does say that there are legends of a paradise, but Raduko dismisses them as ancient drawings. Meanwhile, John and Katma are trying to figure out what is wrong with his ring, but Katma soon realizes that it is Despero did something to John, who does admit that he feels like something is missing. Katma decides that the only way to help him is to retrain him step by step. At the palace, Despero reviews the officer in charge of capturing the resistance. Despero orders the officer to go into the desert and await a vision from him as a penance. Yeah, I got Khan back. The officer gives his praise to Despero, who informs his minister, Crisblack. Wow, that's a horrible name to have. Oof. That the officer won't be back. Crisblack asks why the resistance is so dangerous if there are so few, and Despero replies that they could corrupt the movement. Only Despero is the voice of the Pytar. No one may challenge him. In the catacombs, John is still having trouble concentrating with his ring. He angrily decides to take a break and vents to Hot Girl that Katma still treats him like a raw recruit. Hot Girl says that that's common for people to see others as they best remember them, and she says that as someone who knows him in the here and now, she wants him to get back to work or face her wrath. Meanwhile, Jean has reasoned that Despero is using the Pytar similar to the energy of the Green Lanterns use, which powers his legion. They must destroy the Pytar to defeat Despero. But Katma says that the Pytar is a self-sustaining nuclear plasma reaction. Kilowog then announces that he can build a carbon bomb, which will negate the reaction. When all else fails, go for the carbon bombs.
Doesn't look better.
Ding! Star Trek reference! At the palace, Despero is speaking to the Pytar, assuring that the conquest is going well. Crisblack enters with Roduko, fucking traitor, who announced that he wishes to join the winning side and will betray the resistance. Despero orders a strike force to take out the resistance. At the catacombs, John has given up on retraining and is arming himself. Katma fears that John will have to be sent back for training on Oa and that Kyle Rayner will take over his sector. I would have actually liked that to happen. I know it didn't happen, but that would have been kind of cool to see Rayner in a full-time Justice League deal. Hot Girl chastises Katma for giving up on him and gives a few words of encouragement to John. Suddenly, the Legion attacks, and Katma seals off the section of the catacombs that Flash and Kilowog and John are in. The Resistance attack, but the Strike Force has Pytar-empowered soldiers with them. Taken to the tunnels in the palace, Despero decides to work his will on the two lanterns. At Hot Girl, he overwhelms Katma and prepares to do the same to Hot Girl, considering making her part of his personal,
regime. Crush?
Yeah, something. I don't know what the hell that damn word says. With an act of sheer willpower, John calls his power ring to him, frees himself, and attacks Despero. John and Despero are evenly matched, but John manages to score a symbolic victory by hitting Despero's third eye, leaving the imprint of the power ring on it. I didn't even notice that.
Yep,
I'll have to go back and look at that. That's kind of cool. Elsewhere, Flash, Kilowog, and John make it to the Pytar chamber with the carbon bomb. Getting past the guards, Kilowog arms the device and seals the doors. Before he can throw it in, John tells him to stop. The Pytar is a sentient being, in pain, and hopes to make contact. Before he can further explain, Jean jumps into the Pytar as the soldiers, priests, and priestesses make their way to the chamber. Jean rises from the Pytar, bathed in flame and with a third eye. The Pytar says that it is the natural life force of Kalinar, which was suppressed eons ago. Despero was the release of the Pytar and let it restore Kalinar's ecosystem, but used it for his own petty ends. The Pytar offers paradise, but the Kalinarians must reject Despero. The Kalinarians bow down to the Pytar as the soldiers cast away their weapons. Jean falls to the floor and the Pytar turns into a great tree in the tunnels, and Despero is consumed by a tree while the Legion soldiers, empowered by the Pytar, turn to trees as well.
Wow.
Knock off all this tree-hugging hippie crap.
Did you think of Beast Machines?
We'll get to that in a minute. On Kalinar, green foliage spreads across the desert. Shiflet declares it a miracle, but Jean says that it is just the state of Kalinar. Katma and Kilowog will remain behind to help the Kalinarians rebuild and readjust. While the League heads back to Earth, John takes them home, his will restored, and he tells Hot Girl that some things can't be taught, some people get through experience, and when she asks him what he responds, is clarity. Yes, I kind of did, but not really, because Beast Machines was tech organic, or tech organic, or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could draw that line, but I don't know, it wasn't really... It was more trees, it was more organic than it was anything else, but...
Let's see. Earlier I mentioned that, about the whole cat thing. If she goes under her GL garb, doesn't that give her cover away?
Pretty much.
Oh, God. Katma trained Kyle. Very cool.
That was very cool.
Why is it... I actually only have four notes. I have two more. Why is it that when I saw a Hot Girl smack GL's ass, I think of Puddle of Mud song Control? and my final note, which will eventually be... It won't really become a running gag or a running count, but this is the first time that John says, that GL says, "Light him up!" He does this again.
In a case of, "Hera, give me strength."
Could be. Sounds a hell of a lot better than that, though. I'm trying to think. What was it? Oh, the next... I think the next time he says that would be, the Amazo episode when he comes back. The Return in Unlimited, so... What about you on this second part?
A faulty ring, and at this point I was kind of wondering if Katma might be under the influence of Despero. So I'm like, huh, should she switch rings? I didn't know what was going on. The Flash hitting on Katma, because, you know, she's breathing and she's female. I think he still is, you know, arguable about the breathing thing. the Kyle Rayner name drop, that was awesome. I don't like Kyle at all, but awesome. A living flame, and what does John do? He throws himself into it. Isn't he afraid of fire? Isn't that like his one big weakness?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, wait, isn't it yellow? That's his weakness? Or not yellow, but... Yeah, isn't it like...
It's fire.
Well, it's fire, it's not, but this fire was purple. Anything purple, it rules.
Okay. Yeah, the whole spooky, spooky-looking Jean, I thought that was really badass when he was possessed.
Yeah, that was a good image there.
And now we start seeing, John really starting to make shapes in other forms. I know we saw it happen a couple times in other episodes, but this time it was really brought to the forefront that he can do something else besides simple laser beam and big bubble.
Right.
Yeah, I got G-O-H-G. I have no clue what I wrote that down for, but,
G-O what?
Oh, Go Hot Girl. Go Hot Girl.
Oh! Okay, yeah, Go Hot Girl. Smack that ass.
Yeah, so, pretty much. yeah, and then at the end, the just big, big shippy moment.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I don't like this two-parter, is because, now that I've rewatched it, I really kind of get what... and I know you don't listen to this, but I will constantly be comparing our notes to World's Finest Podcast notes, because they'll bring up stuff that I may not catch on at first when I'm first taking my notes. But Michael David Sims over there said that this could have easily been a one-parter. I mean, you could have easily gotten this story done in 22 minutes. And not have it seem too rushed. I don't know why this needed a two-parter, but that was their format in the first two seasons of two-part stories. I don't know. It's just one of those episodes where, meh. It's not the worst thing ever. I don't think anything in season two can be compared to the worst thing ever so far. that episode that shall not be named. It's not one of the best ones. I don't like the plot. I really don't like the plot at all.
It's not exactly the best, no.
No. Not at all. You have anything else, sir?
That's all I got.
Alright, we are going to move into the outro.
Target destroyed.
Vandal, what do you think you're doing?
Destroying the Justice League, building a railgun, assuming total dominion over the nations of the Earth.
You're ranting like your grandfather in an old newsreel.
Sweet, foolish child. Wonder Woman was right all along.
Ridiculous! You'd have to be over 100 years old.
I'm far older than that. The first time a meteor granted me power was over 25,000 years ago. My fellows cowered with fear. I dared approach the strangely glowing rock. It was warm. The night was very cold. I slept curled up next to it, not realizing what its rays were doing to me. But over the millennia that followed, as I watched those around me grow old and die, while I remained unchanged, I discovered the truth and came to accept my destiny.
Destiny?
I live to rule.
Delusions of grandeur aside, I rule Kasnia.
That's why I married you. It's also why I poisoned your father.
You poisoned?
This is quote number one of episode 8.
Who are you working for?
This is quote number 2 of episode 8.
You know, we never did get to finish our dance.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If you say so, but you're still taking me dancing.
Alright, well, before we get to the outro, just overall, for me, Maid of Honor and Hearts and Minds, they're okay stories. They're not the worst stories in Justice League Seasons 1 or Season 2, but they're just not something I'd watch for fun.
I like them. I mean, they're not stellar performances, but it's something to put on the background.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that I liked. Like, you know, like I said before, you know, the whole Diana, Bruce, Batman, Wonder Woman thing, that's cool. You know, there's certain aspects that I like, but the overall plots for both two-part episodes kind of sucked.
Yeah. They could have been one-shot episodes.
Yeah, they could have. Alright. So, thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins podcast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. Join the forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Secret Origins. Mine is TFG1 Mike. What is your Twitter?
Caminiti Style. CaminitiStyle.
Become a fan on Facebook. Search Geekcast Radio Network. Call the voicemail line, tell us the show you're leaving a message for, and your name, 502-526-5821. Check out our new partner, Blogomatic 3000, at www.blogomatic3000.com. It's pretty much a catch-all geek site. They're based out of the UK, so they're our UK affiliate. So, yay, go Londonites, I guess. I don't know. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins podcast. Wish you'll join us next time when we will be reviewing 3 more stories from Justice League Season 2, those being A Better World, Eclipse, and The Terror Beyond. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
The Discovery.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.